Welcome to Fellowship Talks, your weekly connection to the life and ministry of Fellowship Bible Church. It is our desire that this podcast will reinforce your worship on Sundays and encourage you as you live your life for Christ this week. Here are your hosts, Dan Schaefer and Amy Scrivanos.
Welcome to Fellowship Talks. It's good to be with you today. We're glad you're here listening with us. As always, I'm Dan Schaefer. I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, guys. I'm Amy Scrivanos.
Amy, we're going to be talking a little bit about missions today, and we take a time out from everything else we're doing to highlight missions here at the church from time to time and meet with one of our missions partners.
Yeah, it's fun to get to just step back and think about all the missionaries and missions partners that we support around the world. And I'm really excited about our guest today, just, you know, realizing that we have supported this ministry now for 31 years as a church. And I just found that really amazing, just that we get to have these partnerships over many years and see what God does through them.
That's right. That's right. So let's just jump in and let's introduce Steve. Steve's here with us, and he's one of our missions partners. He lives and serves in India. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you're here in the U.S. What are you here in the U.S. right now for?
Well, right now we're it's our summer break and from our seminary. So we have a seminary and a school. And so usually the summer break, I usually come to the U.S., meet with our partners, update them on what's going on. And that's usually my predecessor was doing it. Now it's my job to start doing it.
Gotcha.
So you're here for how long?
For about 7 weeks.
Oh,
so I've
wow.
already been here for 2 weeks, another 5 more weeks to go.
Okay. Yeah. And did you bring your family with you?
No, I didn't. In fact, we had a little deal. I gave them a choice. I said, either you can come to America or I can get you a puppy. They chose the puppy. But towards the end, they were saying, oh, can we come to America? I said, no, we already made the deal. So you got to stay with the puppy. So now they're at home taking care of the puppy. Though yesterday, I had some other news about the puppy. They said the puppy's name was Oliver. She said, I think we have to change the name to Olivia because it's not a male, it's a female.
Oh.
I said, well, we have a little gender dysphoria as well, little problems, you know, child.
Oh, no.
So it's been kind of fun with this little pup. They're having fun with it. My kids are 10 and 8, and they're really enjoying it. And they're enjoying the summer. It's summertime in India. So the summer vacation in India for their school is April, May. And so they're pretty much enjoying the summer.
Nice.
Yeah. So dogs are pets in India?
Yes. It is for us.
Okay.
And for most people, yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, I've been married for about 12 years. I've got 2 children, Ashish and Anjali. And they are 10 and 8. And we moved back to India about 2 years ago. And the adjustment back to India was great. The Lord really made it really smooth for us. And my wife is involved with special needs ministry, and she's actually a specialist helping children with autism. And she has what's called a board-certified behavior analyst certification, which in India there are only about 15 people or so who have that kind of training. And so we're working on developing and creating an autism center along with a special needs ministry. We have a K-12 school, and she works at the special needs ministry at the school. Actually, she just created the department. And she has a staff there, and then she's working with children with autism as well.
Yeah, that's good, Steve. And I just want to take a moment to let all our listeners know that because of where you serve in India, we want to be a little cautious with what we're saying today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're using only your first name, and we're not mentioning your wife's name at all. But our people here at Fellowship can learn a little bit more about your family by looking at our global missions book. Page 43 and page 47, you can learn about the organization that Steve works with, and you can learn a little bit more about your family too there. And we don't have that as a church listed online at all, just for their safety, but we have that listed in the global missions book that you can pick up from our missions wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would love to hear just a little bit about your journey with Fellowship and how we became partners.
Well, it started a long time ago when Bill Parkinson and the president were in the same seminary together. And they had formed a friendship. And then when the church here started as a smaller church, it was also starting as a partner with this ministry, which was also really small. And it started with that. And over the years, we've just continued that partnership, and the ministry in India has just grown.
Mm-hmm.
And church so, here has also grown.
So we're talking about the president of your organization.
Right.
Not the president of India.
No, right.
Okay.
The president of our organization. Right.
Okay, yeah.
And they had a friendship and it grew, and the partnership with the church just grew. And really, our partnership really deepened over the past decade or so when we started having more teams and visitors from Little Rock come and see the work. And that has become a real important part, because you can hear about it, but until you're there, the context and everything, and then you start moving from a two-dimensional to three, four-dimensional understanding of what God is doing.
Yeah.
And you start seeing the kingdom of God bigger. And that connection and that understanding of what's going on in India, that God is working there, and therefore then this partnership becomes deeper and richer, and that's really how it's grown over the past decade.
That is so good. You know, Amy, you're getting ready to take a trip to Rwanda this summer, and my wife is going on that trip, but it's a connection with one of our missions partners there, and getting to see an inside look, and my wife has a chance to meet one of the children that we sponsor over there, too.
Uh-huh. That really is one of the unique things about taking a trip like that, is we hear about these ministries, and we can be praying for them, but when you see it firsthand, your heart for that ministry really grows, and you're able to come back and share with other people and tell more stories. And I think that's an important part of the partnership, is having people actually see it firsthand.
Right.
So Steve, you would welcome people from Fellowship to come visit you?
We do. We love teams. We usually have teams of about 8 to 10.
Okay.
That gives us an optimal size. And we have various ways they can be partnering with us, working with us. It helps us because it helps relieve us in certain roles. It's good for the people they minister to because they get a diverse voice, a different experience, a different way to be to encounter God and to hear the word. And it also helps just in the partnering for the visitors themselves. They start seeing things. They just see things so differently. And seeing things in a different context and culture also helps you understand God bigger than what you understand. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking it through your cultural lens, you start seeing God acting and working in ways that transcend culture, and how the story of the gospel and the word of God transcend that. Mm-hmm. I think they get to see that. I think for the visitors, that's their biggest takeaway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that we really like when they come.
Yeah. So tell us some things that you noticed from living in the U.S. and there about just some cultural differences that we might experience if we came there.
Well, you know, culture, I found, especially these two cultures and countries, just so they're literally on the other side of the world. And culturally also, there are just so many differences. Yet when you dig deep down to the core human experience, really the word of God really shines the light on our humanity, our issues with sin, our need for a savior, a need for reconciliation with God. And so, like, on the surface, when you come, the first thing you will be shocked when you come is just the sea of humanity. Mm-hmm. The 1.2 billion people on a third of the land mass of the United States.
Oh,
you come in and you are shocked with how many people. You cannot go anywhere without seeing so many people. I remember when I first came from the United States when I was 18, my dad and I were driving and we were in Wyoming. And for an hour, we didn't see a soul. And we were scared. We thought, did the rapture happen? Are the people gone? What happened? We've never had that kind of experience because we were always around people.
Mm-hmm.
So the good side of that is people are all around you. You're never lonely in one sense. And culturally, too, people are around you and they're always there. And so a strong sense of community that exists. So that's one side of it. And then when you come here, it's, again, very different. It's a Western advanced, it's a developed country. But in India, things have changed over the past two decades. You know, there's been advancement, but still a lot of the things still are very much traditional, a part of the culture. The way we even do our marriages, the way we dress, we eat. I mean, every dimension, there are just so many differences. And so when you look at that, you feel that there's differences. But what really connects us is the humanity, especially as is described in scripture, the common image of God, and our common needs and our common struggles. You dig deep down, very much similar stories. On the surface, they look very different. But you dig deep, they're very, very common.
What's something that you think that believers here in the U.S. can learn from Christians in India?
I think one of the things is, the importance of community, that when you are involved in the community, there's a risk of exposing part of your life. And sometimes in America, we are much more private. We like our individuality.
Yeah.
But when you're part of a community, we want the benefits of a community in the sense of we love the love and the unity we have, but sometimes we don't like the vulnerability. But I think that's one thing we have to accept, that when you are part of a community, vulnerability is an important part of it. And so in India, for example, they'll be much more direct about asking you certain questions. Here, you feel, well, that's a little personal.
Like,
you
what?
I mean, they may ask you, like, how much you make, you know, your salary, you know, and some people have learned to say, well, I make enough, you know, that's the kind of, you know, good answer to give. But again, they're not meaning in a very intrusive way. They're just used, to asking questions, which may be seeming more personal here, but it's just being part of being personal. Now, there's the downside of it, and this is part of human nature, that that personal information is sometimes fodder for gossip or just wanting to know information, not really love. So that's what we have, even in India, we have to always challenge ourselves and say, am I involved in this person's life out of just a morbid fascination, or do I really love them? And I'm really part, are we part of one community to serve and help one another?
That's right.
So these are the pros and the cons of being part of a community. What is the always the core issue is the issues of sin. You know, do we, am I looking at it at through the foundations of the gospel to love them and to point them to Christ, or am I trying to validate myself to make me feel better?
So what are some of the things you think just about the rhythms that people participate in India that foster better community than what we have here?
Well, I think there's some things about the dynamics of life that also help. For example, in America, time is so valuable. It's so tight. We have to plan everything by schedule. And we don't have much margin for a lot of those things there. They've got a lot of margin. And sometimes it's because it's not as well planned. And so we have the downside of that. But when you have more margin, you have ability to just organically connect with people and say visit or do something and allow some of that margin. I think the challenge here is the real crunch for time. You're, the structures around you force you to say, we've got to do these in certain amounts of time. Now, then so the flip side of that isn't going to go back and change the culture where you are and say, you know what, I am going to be have this much margin. Maybe you don't have the ability to do that. But if that's not the case, then being intentional about how you use your time, and therefore that becomes more important here. It's not going to happen as automatically as it does in our context where we have that kind of margin. If it's not available here, that's why more and more people are talking about being intentional, committing that time. And committing time is like almost like committing money and saying, I'm going to give money, I'm going to give my time. This is important. And so in this context, the again, the goals are still the same. Now in Indian context, because of our time, we can do it a little more easily. Here, you have to make a more of a commitment.
I think that's a really good point, just that here we do value time so much that that's a valuable investment in other people. So if we can be intentional with that time and invest in others.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your organization. You want to share a little bit more about your organization, like what kind of work you guys are doing?
Right. We our focus is on advancing the gospel ministry through theological education, a social work, and church planting. These are three main areas. And so theological education, we have an undergraduate Bible college. We have a seminary with master's and doctoral programs, and we have an online program. We've got about 200 students currently in all of these programs put together. And we have had about 800 graduates go out to different parts of India, Nepal, Myanmar. And these guys are, again, the trainers. They are pastors. But whenever they, wherever they go, because they are the most educated, not just theologically, but just educated per se, they end up being the ones starting schools in their area, starting theological training programs for other pastors who have no theological training. So really it has a great multiplying effort for what we invest in these graduates. And that's been the starting point. And so it really started with the seminary back about 40 years ago. The other ministries have really expanded just because the Spirit of God moved us and said, these are needs you just can't sit there and not do anything about. So when we bought this campus, about a 40-acre campus, the people who sold it to us said, you know, you need to start a school. You need to start a hospital. We need these things. So that's one way the Lord pushed us and said, okay, we need to start these ministries. So we started a K-12 school about 20 years ago with about 225 students. Today, we're of 3,000 kids in the K-12 school. 90% of these kids are from non-Christian homes. And we get to teach them the Bible from creation to Christ. We use New Tribes Missions curriculum. Because in India, there's no understanding of the Bible story, the gospel story. And so if you go with the gospel, you're starting at zero. But with these kids, we can start explaining the whole story. And so when they come and see the whole story, then the gospel makes so much more sense. And we have them for nearly 10 years, and 90% come from non-Christian homes, and they get to hear the gospel.
So I thought that Christianity was illegal in India.
It's not illegal. We have the rights to propagate, to preach the gospel, but we're getting much, much more, it's getting much more persecution is happening from a governmental level in one way, but mostly from local groups and local organizations that are really against what we're doing as far as preaching the gospel. So that's where we're having the pressures. Now, next year when the elections come up, there is more of a push to take away these rights. And I think that's a prayer concern for us is, you know, we these are rights we already have. We're operating in them, but we're operating in a very tight environment. We have to be very careful. We have to be wise. We have to be continue to do the work we do, but we have to be quite wise in how we balance these things.
What's been the reception of like the parents of the children that come that are from non-Christian homes?
Well, Christian education has a high reputation in India. And so it has a reputation of providing high quality education. In fact, there was a guy who was a Hindu down the street who took named his school Mary Magdalene High School just because he wanted the marketing value of a Christian school.
Wow. Gotcha.
So a Christian school has high value because we are known for high quality. So they want to come. They want a good English education. They want their kids to learn English. I remember there was another guy who was going to a much more expensive school, and the his driver's kids were coming to our school. And he saw his kid; those kids were speaking better English than his kids. And he said, why am I paying double the price here? Can I get admission in this school? And he brought them to our school. So they want the quality education. They want their kids to know English well, because when they go out into college and the workplace, English is now the language for higher education, for getting a job, and they come and value it. And so when they come to us, they sign a waiver saying, we have no objection to you teaching the Bible. That's, we say that's how we teach moral instruction. If you have any objection, they said no objection. They want the education, so they're willing and open to that.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's so great.
So you have the seminary, the K through 12 school, the hospital, and an orphanage.
Orphanage, right? And so the hospital is a 30-bed hospital, serves the surrounding villages, and it's really given us with the school ways to really have open access to the locality. You know, 20 years ago when we would go, if our seminary students would go and just go in evangelism, and one time they were tied up for about 6 hours, and then they told them to go out and never come back. But now if we go, we don't have a problem because they know we have invested in the community. We are there for the benefit of the community. We are serving the community. We are benefiting them, and they respect us. And so even if they don't like what we do, they may respectfully say, okay, look, we let you come in, you can do the medical work, but you know, maybe don't do this. But most villages, they don't have any problem because of the goodwill that we have generated in terms of what we are, how we're serving the community. And that's really been a part of our focus, that the gospel transforms us from within, but it changes life, it changes your physical life, it changes societies. It's all transformative. And that's really what we're showing. It's a holistic way of looking at the gospel and understanding what God is doing. And we want, and it's not just for the people outside. It's our seminary students. They see this and they say, yes, this is really what the gospel does.
Yeah. Can you tell us a story of something that you have seen God do in the last year through your organization?
Well, we've seen so many in terms of, you know, if I just pick one, the House of Joy, for example, our orphanage, where a girl who just grew up entirely in that in our home. And her father was a staunch Hindu priest, and he was wanting her to, he didn't care about her while she was growing up, and he had kind of abandoned her because her mother had died. But when she graduated college, which we took care of her until college, and then he said, no, I want you to marry, and I'm going to force you to marry a non-Christian. I'm going to force you to marry a Hindu. And she said she didn't know what to do. And so she came to us, and in India, we do arranged marriages, you know. So it came to a point, usually the parents arrange it. So now we are like her parent. And there was a seminary student on our campus, and we first approached him, and he prayed about it, and he said yes. And so he eventually married her. We did her wedding. Her father was going to try to stop it, but we had to do it quietly and quickly. And but we were able to do it, and now they're married. They're on campus now. He's our chaplain on our campus, and they have a baby girl recently. And so we've been able to see this girl from age of five, where nobody wanted her, to a point where now she was being almost persecuted by her father. But having to see God deliver her and bring her in and, in a sense, protect her. Again, this is also where a lot of our kids who are growing up, we're helping them through college, but now we're coming to a stage where a lot of them coming to marriageable age. We have to help them find spouses because in the Indian context, it's not by dating, which you can, some people do, but 95% are arranged marriages. Mm. So we have now have to work and help them through through that. And so that was a bit of a scary time because, you know, there were a lot of threats and things going on, but the Lord took care of her.
So once a student marries then a believer, mm-hmm. what happens with does their family accept that because they're now married?
Well, no, yes. So her father now has nothing to do with her, says, you know, you're dead to me kind of a thing. And this is what happens. A lot of believers, a lot of people, when they become Christians, they, in the community where being connected to your community is so important, to be ostracized and cast out is a huge cost. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have to pay for years and decades. They never have any contact with their families. But over time, sometimes the Lord softens them and they, when they have children and then maybe as grandchildren, the parents are a little softer. I remember one of our graduates, he's a pastor of one of our churches. And for nearly 10 years, he would not be allowed back into his home. But then once he had children, they finally allowed him back, but they would not allow him and his wife back in the home. They would allow only the children. So they would stay outside. Kids would go in and then they would come back because they would consider them like almost, there's a caste system. Mm. So they consider them, you know, almost like as a low caste and an outcast. And so that still, that social ostracization is a cost many of them have to face if they become believers.
Yeah, a lot of that we just have no contextual reference for here in the U.S., do we, Amy?
No.
Like, we don't have any idea about arranged marriages. Although many parents might actually like embrace it here, but
yes,
but our kids will never embrace it. Mm-hmm. And but then the caste system too, and we just don't really have a context for that. So visiting Steve and his ministry might help shape that cross-cultural understanding that we're talking about. So Steve, can you real quickly, just as we close up our podcast today, can you tell us a little bit about the Hindu religion? The Hindu religion is the dominant religion in India, and just how you guys go about interacting with the Hindu religion and sharing the gospel in that environment.
Yeah, and the Hindu religion is very different from, say, any of the other religions because it's not so much a religion as we would describe the other religions. It would be more like a corporation of multiple religions. It's a religion. The word Hindu really comes from the word Indus, which is really the river Indus, which really describes the people who live in India. So, for example, the Hindu really represents the person who lives in India. Mm. But when the Arabs and the Westerners came in, they were trying to describe the religion of these people. Well, the religion of the Hindus eventually became called, you know, Hindu.
Okay.
So really as a unified, they don't have a unified book. They don't have a unified God. They have multiple thousands of religious books. No dominant scripture. They have no dominant God. Though they have some major gods, but again, there's a pantheon of millions of gods.
Wow.
And so they have some common things. They have issues like, for example, caste is a very important part of the religion. Not eating beef. The sacred nature of the cow, karma, and the reincarnation, some of those things. So there are a few elements and certain beliefs that seemingly are the common elements. But really, when you go to India, what you find is every region has their own real local deity. They worship that deity. That's their caste deity. That's their local deity. And really, that's the religion of that particular area. And it's a very localized way of looking at their gods. So it's very hard, really, other than these few things which I've mentioned, to define what is it that defines Hinduism. Now, of course, more and more Hindus are trying to define some kind of common elements of what is Hinduism. But reality is they are multiple religions, multiple gods for different castes. And again, India is so diverse, 400 different languages, 3,000 castes and subcastes. 3,000 people groups, you know, in terms of just ethnic people groups. And in the midst of that, that's where Hinduism has its own flavors and deities. And then so in that context, when you talk to any Hindu, it all depends where they come from, what their caste is, what their education is. And so the way we encounter them is not so much of having to deal with their gods, but focus on the gospel. We focus on the one God. We focus on the call of the creator God. We talk about this God as the God, and then we talk about it in terms of the whole gospel story. So for them, a lot of it has also to do with the spiritual element too. There is a spiritual, powerful spiritual element that is, in a sense, demonic because of the idol worship that's there. Mm-hmm. And, even as Paul says in the book of Corinthians, taking from Deuteronomy, how behind every idol there's a demon. So demonic powers, again, that's very much part of how the religion operates. But for them, that's their spirit world. That's their spirituality. But for us, as we look at it from a Christian worldview, that would be, demonic. So we're dealing with a lot of those elements in addition when we're encountering them, that we have to understand that our battle, as Ephesians says, is not against flesh and blood. It's against the rulers, the principalities, the spiritual realm. And it's all the more clear when we are engaging in India. That is a clear picture that we have to understand. When we engage them, and again, but this reality is true whether it's in India or not, you have to be filled with the Spirit of God to proclaim the truth of God, to know and how to encounter this.
Because that's right.
This is not just a unique thing. This is worldwide how we must preach and proclaim the gospel.
The gospel is not centered on the U.S. or on India. The gospel is universal around the entire world. And God has a heart to reach every nation and every people on this earth with his with his good news of Jesus. So, Steve, thanks for being here with us today. How can people pray for you, your family, and the work that you're doing in India?
A few things. Pray for the elections that are coming next year. I think the government would like to continue to tighten and make things harder. Pray that the Lord provides us a government which helps protect us in terms of our freedom, to have the freedom to preach and propagate the gospel, to protect us in terms of just the way we do ministry. It's unpredictable. Right now, the Lord has blessed the work. We've been away from harm. But we don't know what tomorrow is there, but the Lord is with us. And we've seen the Lord who was with us in the past is going to be the Lord who will be with us through the ups and the downs. So pray for that election that's coming up next year, 2019. That's a very important prayer point. The other points are praying just for our seminary, our church planting, our school. Yeah. Continue that we flourish and with the success we've been having so far, that God continues to bless that work. That we stay faithful, that we don't deviate from what our goal and mission is, but that we continue to experience this great success. I've defined the ministry as it's an opportunity to see the glory of God while we walk in obedience to Him. So really, it is God's glory being seen in this. It's God who's bringing about the success in what we do, but it has to happen while we are obedient to Him. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen while I'm disobedient. It's not going to happen while I don't do anything. He wants to use us. He's giving us this opportunity to see something powerful, which is why the short-term mission trips are just so important, because we want our partners not just to send the money, but to see what God is doing, being part of it, and really pray about it. So when we ask them to pray about something, they understand this is what we're praying about. Mm-hmm. They can see it. They've been there. They understand.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you for being here with us today. This has been a good episode with Fellowship Talks today.
So good for me. I've read about you and your ministry, and just to hear firsthand though your heart for that ministry and just the impact that you're having.
Yeah, and I just want to remind everybody that if you have more questions about what Steve is doing with his organization and his work in India, you can talk with our missions team here at Fellowship, specifically Elisa Williams. She would love to talk with you more about what's going on over there. You can look at our global missions book, our guidebook, on page 43 and 47. You can learn about Steve and his organization. And we just really encourage you to check out more about Steve and our partnership that we have with them in ministry for the gospel all around the world. Mm-hmm. And so as we go from here, we want to encourage you to continue to pray for him. Consider whether God has you going on a trip, and maybe bring that up with our missions team here to go on a trip and to see what God is doing over in India. Just Amy, just hearing about the 400 different languages, the 1.3 billion people in India is just overwhelming and fascinating to me at the same time.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So, well, we're just really thankful for you guys listening today. And if you have any questions, email us at fellowshiptalks@fellowshiponline.com. And other than that, Amy, I guess that's the end of the show today.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Until next time, I'm Dan.
And I'm Amy.
For As You Go, this is Fellowship Talks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fellowship Talks. We hope this podcast will help you be a more effective disciple of Jesus Christ as you love God and you love others in your daily context. Fellowship Bible Church exists to make disciples who live by God's grace and for His glory at home and across the world.